Eat Geek Play Podcast, episode number 14, talking Daredevil and Captain Crunch with Mark Wade.
I used to be all smash and no talking. I used to be something more like a most wanted object. Teamed up with S.H.I.E.L.D. to do some good for the world. So now when they're needing the smash, just point me to the target. Crush the competition, smash the landscape. Cause that big green guy, you know he's never going away. So Dr. Banner's here to stay. I'm so under control and like they used to think that guy was so incredible. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Eat Geek Play podcast. My name is Kevin Knight. I'm the editor-in-chief of eatgeekplay.com, the website where we talk geek almost every day of the week. Well, this is the podcast that I've been working towards. When I sat down to do this podcast, I made myself a list of people that I really wanted to interview. The top of that list, Mr. Mark Wade. Now, I'm going to go back a little bit and tell you some stories. I met Mark a couple years ago. I do photography as well. You can go check it out at theshutterclick.com if you feel so inclined. And I was working on a project where I was shooting artists and writers in their studio spaces. And I got the chance to meet Mark. And man, Mark Wade is a vast knowledge of just everything comic books. He can recall the days of the week of the Kryptonian calendar. It's amazing. So when I was shooting with Mark, I got the chance to just really talk to him. And, you know, Mark is one of the biggest Superman fans that I know. And I've just never really been a huge Superman fan. So the discussion led to Superman versus Batman versus Punisher and Daredevil and stuff. Really long conversation. It was great. And I walked out of there thinking, okay, fine. I'm going to read Birthright because, you know, Mark had written it. And I became a believer, guys. If you have not read Birthright by Mr. Mark Wade, do yourself a favor, go read it. Over the years, there's been so many Superman stories written, good and bad, and, you know, Birthright is just the perfect Superman story. Flash forward to earlier this year, and I started up this podcast, and I made my list of people that I really wanted to interview, and Mark was at the top of that. Not because I knew that it was going to attract people and that people were going to pay attention. No, I just wanted to sit down and talk to Mark Wade because we've never had a chance to talk about the fact that he's writing my favorite comic book character. See, I always feel like when you start reading comic books, you gravitate towards a certain character. For me, there's two. Spider-Man and Daredevil. Daredevil, to me, is that comic book that no matter who's writing it, no matter who's drawing it, I'm going to read it. But when somebody that I really enjoy and somebody that I really like is drawing it and writing it, then I get really excited. Daredevil right now is the best comic book on the shelves. I promise you, you're not going to find something better. Well, you might, but for me, this book is fantastic. There's been 33 issues so far, and now there's a rumor saying that it's going to end with 36. Mark does talk about this a little bit. He drops some hints, but let's just say when this series wraps up, the omnibus for this book is going to be amazing. I tried something different with this interview as well. I let people on Twitter and Facebook and Reddit know that I was interviewing Mark and let them ask some questions. So, yeah, we actually got to him. So make sure you're following the Eat Geek Play Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr pages, and maybe you'll get the chance to ask one of our guests a question. As always, before we get into it, I gotta pay some bills. This episode is brought to you by the Long Beach Comic and Horror Convention happening November 23rd and 24th at the Long Beach Convention Center in Long Beach, California. Every week, I run down the list of who's going to be at Long Beach Comic Con. This week, I'm just going to tell you about one person. One person that you need to seek out and say hello to and get your book signed. This week's person, Lynn Wein. Now, I know some of you already know who Lynn Wein is, but for the younger audience, this is the man who created some of your favorite comic book characters, and you probably don't even know it. Lynn is responsible for Wolverine, the first appearance in Hulk 181. Yeah, that was written by Lynn Wein. And it was just created as a one-shot. He thought this guy was just going to show up in one issue and go away. Not long after that, Lynn partnered up with his buddy Dave Cockrum and brought back this team called the X-Men. See, at this point, the X-Men was canceled. It had been canceled for about 5 years, and everybody had kind of forgotten about the book because it wasn't selling. It wasn't that popular. Well, Lynn and Dave changed that whole thing. And because of that book, because of Giant Size X-Men number one, I read comic books. You probably read comic books too. Lynn was a huge impact on the comic book world, and this man is a legend. He was actually inducted into the Eisner Hall of Fame. Now, if you happen to run into Lynn while you're wandering the halls of the Long Beach Comic Con, sure, you can ask him to sign your books. Do that. But take a second, shake his hand, and say thank you, because this man is a legend. All right. That's my soapbox. I also want to let you know that we will have a booth. Yes, eatgeekplay.com is hosting the Podcast Lounge. Now, the Podcast Lounge is this huge space on the comic book floor where we'll have these couches set out so you can come and hang out, relax. There's going to be artists doing sketches for you. So much stuff going on. I can't tell you all about it just yet. But I'll also be recording podcasts with all the guests at the convention. So stop by. It'll be like a little mini convention going on just at our booth. You want to attend this? Go over to longbeachcomiccon.com. Get your tickets. A two-day pass is only $40. That two-day pass is going to get you in a whole half hour early before everybody else. Doors normally open at 10. You get in at 9:30. You come by my booth, I'll give you a free t-shirt. All right. That's all out of the way. Let's go catch up with Mark Wade. I kill giants. Bigger they come, harder they fall. I kill giants. Even when there's no giants at all.
Applying to the store out here in Muncie, that actually has turned out well. And, you know, career-wise, everything's going swell.
When did you move to Muncie?
Well, it's been a gradual thing. My girlfriend lives out here with her kids. She's finishing up her doctorate at Ball State.
Oh, wow.
And so for the last couple of years or so, I mean, we've been going out for like 3 years or more. But a couple of years ago, I said, well, let's rent a house out here together just so that I can have a place to work, you know, like a bigger place to work when I come visit. And that just kind of turned into, well, you can buy a house in Muncie for whatever you can find in your couch cushions. So let's buy a house. And then it just sort of became more gradually move. You know, every time I'd come out and stay, I'd bring more stuff. And, you know, before you know it, I'm pretty much living here. I've still got the place in Los Angeles that I'm hanging on to mostly, you know, at least until the end of the year, until Obamacare kicks in and I can make some different health insurance arrangements. But it's really interesting living out here in Smallville. So
I was gonna say, is it like living in Smallville?
It's a lot like living in Smallville. It's a lot, but it's, you know, but it's okay. It's nice and quiet. You know, I get a lot of work done. There's not a whole lot of distractions. It's in a way that's it's almost forceable in that sense, and that I still haven't brought my car out from Los Angeles. So we only have the one car, and she's at the store all day. I really kind of have no choice but to park my ass in front of the computer and type because, you know, where am I going to go?
Well, okay, let's get into it, Mark.
Yeah, all right.
You are the busiest man in comic books right now.
I seem to be.
How many books are you writing right now?
Oh, God. All right, let's see. So it's Daredevil and Hulk for Marvel. It's Green Hornet for Dynamite. It's Rocketeer Spirit for IDW. There's a couple of other projects that are cooking that, percolating in the background. So that's, you know, another couple that I have to pay attention to. Dr. Spectre for Dynamite. They just announced that. That's right. So that's a 4-issue mini. And then of course there's all the digital stuff. It's an intense workload, but again, as my grandfather used to say, it's a good problem to have because, you know, better to be overworked than underworked.
Exactly. But how do you find the time of day?
I have no idea. Seriously, it's like I'm like the coyote having walked off the cliff. If I look down, a fall. So it helps that, you know, I joked a minute ago about not having a car out here, and therefore I kind of park my butt in the seat and write, but that actually has a lot to do with it. There's not a whole lot of distractions the way I've sort of set up my life here. So I can easily be in this office for 12, 13 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it helps that I still enjoy a lot of what I do. If it were really work, it would just be, you know, I would be aging before your eyes, but at least it's something I enjoy doing. But I wish there were some secret to it. I wish I knew what the formula for productivity was, but I was never, ever one of those guys who wanted to punch a clock. I was never, ever one of those guys who was good about the regimented time frame of the day, because if I wanted to be that guy, I never would have been a freelancer to begin with. You know, I wish I knew what the secret of productivity was, but if I wanted to be one of those clock-punching guys, I never would have been a freelancer to begin with. So I really just, there's so many things that I'm involved with at any given moment, and there's so many different plates spinning that it's not even a matter of keeping to-do lists. It's more a matter of just, you know, watching to see which plate needs the most attention as it spins.
So what is, let's just walk through like a typical day for Mark Waid. I mean, do you wake up and be like, okay, well, today I need to write the Hulk, and then I need to get, you know, today's Hulk day, tomorrow's Daredevil day, the day after that's the Spirit, or is it just like whatever your deadline comes first?
Oh, I can certainly wake up with those plans. I certainly wake with those plans, but they, you know, within an hour, it's a completely different ball game, because, you know, I tend to stay up late and get up reasonably late in the morning, I'm ashamed to say, but I just drag myself to the computer, sit down with a couple of Diet Cokes and whatever passes for breakfast, and I open the emails to see what's going on in the world, and there's always something in the emails that changes the complexion of the day. You know, whether it's somebody needs an interview, or some deadline has moved up, or some little project out there has fallen apart, or just something. So the days that I get up and go, okay, today's a Daredevil day, and it actually is a Daredevil day, those are very rare days. So, the way it generally works for me is that I spend the morning sort of cleaning up the detritus the previous day, and you know, like just the emails, the leftover to-dos, and then after lunch and like in the early afternoon, I start to hit a pretty comfortable groove and go for hours and hours and hours.
And then on top of this, you've decided to buy a comic book store.
Yeah, because again, I needed something to do with my days. We fell into that. I mean, my girlfriend and I have known this guy out here named Jason, who had there were two comic stores in Muncie, in the whole Muncie area, Jason's and another one that has been around, I think, a lot longer. I was not as comfortable in there as I was with Jason's, although it certainly has a lot to offer. And Jason came to us a few months ago and said, look, I can't make, it's a one man show, and I don't have the time and energy and the money to sort of make the leap to the next level, even though he'd been doing it for 8 or 9 years. He was sort of at that point of crisis in his life where he has to figure out what he's going to do for the next few years. And so we came to him and we just said, well, look, let us put some money in, and let's help you over the hump, and let's maybe get you a different location in the area, see if we can put a little bit of money and sweat equity into it. And the next thing I knew, you know, I thought I was writing a check, but surprise, I'm a full partner in this thing, which pleasantly surprised me. I mean, Jason didn't have to be that giving and that forthcoming, but so it's me and Christy and Jason, equal partners in Alter Ego Comics in Muncie, Indiana.
Which, for Mark Waid, Mr. Outspoken Digital Comics guy.
I think
one of your crowning moments in Mark Waid history was your speech at the Eisners.
Digital is digital is the future and print is dead. I know, but the joke was, you know, everybody, when I first told everybody I was buying a comic store, they just assumed I was buying it to burn it to the ground. It, to my surprise, I mean, I'm not afraid of being wrong. I'm certainly not afraid of changing my mind if the facts present themselves. And I would have bet every that print comics would still be in sort of decline they were in the last decade, and that we'd be sort of scraping by, and comics would be super expensive now, and stores would be falling right and left. And instead, you know, what has happened is the best of all possible worlds, which is digital did not cut into print sales. Digital, in fact, sort of supplemented print sales, or they became they sort of working hand in hand as a promotional tool. So print comic sales, much to my stunned surprise, are up, not skyrocketing, not, you know, it's not a new renaissance exactly, but they're certainly not falling. And I attribute a lot of that to the digital influx. I attribute a lot of that to the fact that digital is a great outreach tool for people who are lapsed readers or new readers who are interested in comics. They can sort of dabble on their own time for, you know, fairly inexpensive investment. And then if they're really interested, they can come into stores and talk to clerks and talk to retailers and find out what else is out there. I mean, the great thing about digital is I can buy comics 24/7 on my iPad, wherever in the world I am. But the downside is I don't have any sort of referral system. I don't have any sort of personal touch. I don't have the, you know, the other fans in the area or the other store customers, the other clerks going, well, you know, if you like this, you should try this. Or have you looked at this? And I think that's where comic stores still excel.
Exactly. I completely feel that. I mean, I switched to digital, 5 or 6 years ago. And I mean, I sometimes do miss holding the tangible and having the conversation with the store clerk, you know, but I also like the fact that, you know, I can sit in my underwear and buy, you know, comic book after comic book and not be judged by what I'm buying. Or, you know, it's just kind of consume in mass quantity.
Plus, guys like you and I, you know, in the Los Angeles area, we take for granted how lucky we are to have access to print comics. Because, again, as I keep saying, there's giant swaths of the country that you have to drive 150 miles to find a halfway decent comic store. And even then, that one, you know, because comics are a fairly thin margin business, they're not going to be stocked as deeply as, you know, Meltdown Comics or Blast Off Comics or anything like that. They've, you know, they're kind of ordering to the bone because it's a, you know, they can't afford to spend a whole lot of money on comics they can't sell.
Exactly.
So, you know, conversely, and I will say this, and I have said this all along, is that conversely, the one thing that print gives you that digital doesn't is that there's certain things you can do in print that you can, that are just more favorable to print. Like I keep saying that Jack Kirby would not be well suited to the digital medium as opposed to print, because it's, you know, Jack was all about the giant images and the 2-page spreads and the, you know, the big energy on the open page. And you know, that kind of stuff doesn't translate well to an iPhone, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. And bringing in the digital age is a helping and a hindrance, obviously. But with, I think what you're doing with Thrillbent is really important, just as much as what Comixology is doing with their Submit. It's just right now, it's kind of that no man's land where, you know, it's the uncharted territory and everybody's trying to find out what works between motion comics and, you know, what even to part, like what format is going to work.
And I honestly have less of an idea of what the future of digital comics is today than I did 2 years ago, oddly enough, because it just seems like people are trying all kind of different things. But that's the great thing about it, is that it's so expensive to try to get into it from a print angle, because the print costs are just so heavy. Whereas if you're a young up and coming cartoonist, or you know, you want to do your own web comics, it really all you have to lose is sweat equity. You know, it costs nothing, virtually nothing, to do your own work and put it up online. And what I found is that the webcomics community is so eager for new material and so eager for new voices that, and so friendly and so, you know, so promotional, or so, you know, so good about promotion, that if they find something they like, they'll sound the horns for you.
Exactly. And that's the great thing about the internet is it's such the springboard now. Where I always reckon it to the, you know, my years in the music business was, you know, when Napster came along, it was the, both the hindrance and the growth of the music business.
Yeah.
You know, where all of a sudden we have a way for us to discover new artists, but also a way to kill artists' careers.
Right. You know? Exactly.
So.
Exactly. But that just, it is cruel as it sounds to say, that's just the nature of the business, and it's going to, you know, those technological innovations change everything, change the economy of it, change the distribution of it, change the way people are compensated. And, you know, the downside to it is that no matter what creative field you're in, whether it's music or art or comics or what have you, is that your job now is not 100% the craft of it. Your job is also being a promoter. Your job is also sort of adapting to the new economy and the new, you know, the new medium, and figuring out a way to use social media and other promotional tools to sort of advertise yourself. And not everybody's good at that. I'm not incredibly skilled at it, but because in a perfect world, I'd rather just kind of sit down and put my head down and just write. So I can understand there's some resentment from especially the, you know, older creative folks who are cranky because they don't feel like they should have to embrace anything. You know, they shouldn't have to change the way they do things. They just want to keep doing what they do, which I get. But I think to be effective, you know, you've got to be 80% musician, 20% marketer.
Well, okay. So one of the main reasons I wanted to sit down with you is I really want to talk Daredevil.
Cool.
Can we talk Daredevil for a while?
Yeah.
With Daredevil, it was coming out from a completely dark space. You know, Bendis had just done everything, just raked Matt through the coals and left a pretty much rotting corpse for you to pick up. What was that?
It
like
was
for
something.
You?
It was. I mean, it was a beautiful opportunity because, you know, so much had been done to that character that there, you know, he'd been beaten so bad. There was only one place to go, and that was up. And again, this is in no way a slight to the guys who have been writing the book before me. It's just, it's not what I do. It's not what I'm comfortable with as a writer. As a reader, I liked it, but as a writer, this is not, you know, I don't write a very pessimistic, cynical point of view. I'm just not a big fan of that. I think it's, I think it's a little too common in comics. I'd rather see, especially guys in superhero tights, you know, I'd rather see them be positive. I'd rather see that. It doesn't mean that the stories all have to be happy or chirpy or bright, but I just I don't like cynicism. You know, I don't think it suits superheroes well in the long term. So
when you was it something? Did you seek out the book, or did the book seek?
No,
you out?
They you know, Marvel came to me and said, "This is something you want to do," and I would never in a million years have thought of myself as a Daredevil writer because, you know, as you said, for the last 20 years, it's been sort of a relentlessly gloomy, dreary, sort of fatalistic book, crime noir and very street level. And that just, as a reader, it's just not something that appealed to me. It doesn't mean I didn't like it. It's just, it's not my wheelhouse. But they came to me and I slept on it and I came up with a take and they liked it. And it was a big gamble because it could have blown up in our faces very easily. It could have been, you know, three or four issues of this and then the fans revolting because it wasn't what it was under Bendis or Brubaker and fire him. And luckily, and I credit this almost exclusively to the art and the coloring and the look of the book, I mean, people really got into what we were doing.
I mean, do you feel like it's because you did almost a complete 360 with the character, or was what made people really latch on to what was going on with Daredevil?
I think we got lucky in one place, and I think that is that we could, and I can't take full credit for this because I think I sort of backed into it rather than made the conscious decision to do this. But the fact that we, in the very first issue, we walked right up to the fact that this is not the Matt Murdock that you're familiar with and that he has decided to be a different person because he has been digging himself into a hole for so long. And in other words, he almost broke the fourth wall and sort of acknowledged to the readers, yes, everything about the character and everything about his personality and everything about his mindset, none of that went away. We're not paving over. We're not retroactively denying the stories that have happened before. We're acknowledging all of Matt's history, but building on top of it rather than trying to pave over it, if you will. And I think that bought us a lot of good grace. I think that bought us a lot of patience from people who otherwise might have just been frustrated that this doesn't seem consistent with the Matt Murdock that they know.
And that's the one thing I love about what you've been doing with Matt is, I mean, here again, the tragic hero. I don't think he's ever had a bright day in his life.
No.
And again, something that Mark Waid doesn't do much of the gloomy superhero. And you brought this life into it that, you know, that the happiness, every now and then you get a smile here and there. And the fact that you're really, it seems like you're really playing it with a little more a humor aspect to it that the book hasn't seen for a couple decades, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's still some part of you that's like, okay, we've just got to tear this character down and, you know, bring him back to Hell's Kitchen battered and beaten?
Nah. Cause we've done that. The thing is, we've done that over and over again with that character. So, or not we, not in the sense of my team, but we've, as readers, we've seen that before. I do think that, I mean, it's funny. I was talking the other day with Chris Somni about this, and we talking about how there's a difference between, and I think it's sort of the reason that we twitch a little bit when people describe Daredevil as fun, and it can be fun. It can be a fun book to read, but at the same time, fun seems to connote this notion that there are no stakes, that there's no real drama to it, that there's no tension. And that's not a fair reading, because that's what I think it's very easy to. I think it's a very knee-jerk thing for readers and companies to sort of say that unless there's blood and gore and extreme violence and sexuality on every page, somehow it's not grown up, or it's not, you know, it's not daring. It's not, you know, it's not dramatic, which is crap. I mean, what's important and what, you know, what makes a comic and what makes any story sort of well-rounded so that it's not just happy, bright, shiny people doing happy, bright, shiny things is that there's consequences. There's genuine stakes. There's genuine losses. So, you know, I'm not averse to putting Matt Murdock through his paces, and I'm certainly not averse to taking things away from him and having him, you know, both emotionally and physically getting the crap beat out of him. But not just for the sake of that. I mean, there's still a core of optimism to the book. There's still a core moral center that says that what Matt is doing as Daredevil is worth doing, and that it's, you know, despite the sacrifices that he has to make as a hero, it's still worth doing, but there should be sacrifices. I mean, you know, nobody reads any story to see a happy person with a well-adjusted life go through their day. You know, that's what makes a story is the, you know, what's the fundamental definition of a story? Somebody wants something and something's in his way. That is what a story is. And everything else builds off that. So the question, the question is, when something is in his way, it's got to be something that we care about. It's got to be something that makes a difference. It's got to be something that seems formidable, and doesn't seem like an easy victory.
Were you much of a Daredevil reader at the time?
I had been off and on. I always loved the character when I was a kid, because I love the fact that he would go out and solve his problems rather than mope about them. And I certainly loved Frank Miller's run as much as anybody else in the world. And I loved a lot of the stuff that Bendis did and Brubaker. But I, to be honest, I'd sort of fallen out of reading it in recent years because it had really become, to my mind, such a very cynical book. And that's not a, again, that's not a slight to anybody who was working on it. It just wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah.
So I've gone back and I've done my homework and my research and read everything. And man, there's been some good Daredevil stories.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's a little daunting to step into that bullpen because, you know, I didn't want to be the guy who screwed Daredevil up.
But it's also, you know, there's so much history that, I mean, I'm sure you've, with everything that you've written, I mean, you've got to take in consideration the history that the character comes from in the back, but then set up your own. And the thing that I love that you've been doing with Daredevil is the fact that you're playing up to his blindness that some people have just completely overlooked. And because I feel like his abilities are, people still can't describe what powers, quote unquote, Daredevil has. And sometimes it's like, oh, I can see, but I just can't see colors. And some people, you know, with the radar senses, it's like, oh, I can see 360, you know, where you've really adapted to both sides of him, a blind man with, you know, superhero.
I literally do not go through a single day of my life without at some point being somewhere or in some situation or some, you know, just on my doing what I do on a normal day, thinking to myself, how would Matt Murdock perceive the world around him at this moment? Because that's the interesting thing to me. That's what makes him unique as a character is the power set. And I mean, there's a lot of things I don't do well as a writer, and there's a lot of things I'm sort of mediocre at as a writer. But I do think that one of the things I do well is that sort of MacGyver ability to take a skill set of a superhero or supervillain or, you know, the gadgets or whatever, and figure out new and interesting ways of applying them. You know, Daredevil needs to solve this problem, but he's only got these powers. How do you approach that? I enjoy that. It's a puzzle aspect. I like that idea of, you know, of, okay, Spider-Man has these abilities, and here's what he's up against, and what is he going to do? Not as a person, but you know, what on a superhero level? What are his powers, and what are some interesting ways of approaching that we've never seen before?
And I love the fact that you've been really playing up to the fact that the villains that he's been facing have, you know, like bringing in somebody like you know, Claw, who is completely sound based.
Yeah.
Know? Or the mole man,
because I really wanted two blind guys fighting each other. Yeah.
Exactly. And I feel like that's something that people haven't experimented with Daredevil. Again, it's just, I feel like a lot of writers have treated him just, oh, hey, he's Spider-Man, but, you know, he kills people. You know, or
well,
he's got
exactly,
this
yeah.
dark side to him that, you know, yeah. just he's more tragic than Peter Parker ever will be.
And the sad thing about Daredevil, and I, again, no slight to the 50 years worth of writers before me, but Daredevil has like the worst rogues gallery in comics.
He does, doesn't he?
The lamest, the Matador, Leapfrog, and Stiltman. These are the kind of guys that Matt, you know, faced in the 60s. And, I mean, there's some good stuff in there. There's a few good villains in there that can be done, some, you know, you can do something with. But really, you know, you can go through, you know, you go through the entire giant runs of Daredevil where the villains have just been dull, dull, dull. And the very, you know, the two best Daredevil villains, Kingpin and Bullseye, were stolen from other books. So
again, you know, bringing back that Spider-Man philosophy, it's like he has to deal with Spider-Man's rogues gallery more than he can deal his own.
Yeah.
Because like you said, his rogues gallery is nothing but a bunch of morts. And that, I think that's the great thing. Another, again, singing your praises of Daredevil, you've managed to bring somebody like Spot, you know, which, okay, another Spider-Man character, but when you brought Coyote.
Yeah.
Building on that, you know, Spot, it seems like, again, appealing to the downfalls of Murdoch's powers, you know, and building this new rogues gallery based on that. Is that where you're coming from? Of like, hey, I'm going to we're going to bring in some new life to the Rogues Gallery, his Rogues Gallery.
And it's not even really that calculated. It really is more just, what do I throw Daredevil up against this month, and where, you know, what characters in the Marvel universe am I not used to seeing face off against each other? Because after 50 years of Marvel Comics, you know, I need something more than another Spider-Man Rhino fight. And I've always been a proponent of doing this. I mean, when I was doing Captain America, we used characters like Nightmare. I think we used Claw there as well. I very much enjoyed using villains that Captain America wasn't normally facing. In Kazar, he fought Thanos, the High Evolutionary. The beauty of the Marvel Universe, it's a pretty deep well. You know, you got a really deep bench there, so why not draw from the universe as a whole?
What was the idea of bringing in Ikari then?
That one was I knew I needed a sub-villain. I knew I needed like a kick-ass guy that could be Daredevil's match, but I'm not really great at inventing villains, and I was kicking around for a long time. And when I stumbled on the idea of a master villain trying desperately to give someone Daredevil's powers, by replicating the horrible radioactive accident that caused them, and I just came up with this image in my head of this procession of volunteer prisoners, who don't know what they're in for, and suddenly they're splashed in the face with burning radioactive goo, and many of them die, and some of them are blinded, and then it's like, what powers didn't work for you? Well, next, looking for the guy who's going to benefit from this. That came to mind, and then from there, the idea of Ikari came out, and then from there, the idea that he could see that was his ace in the hole, that he had all of Daredevil's powers and could do everything Daredevil does, plus he's not blind. And that was going to be a big reveal. Spoiler alert. That was going to be a big reveal. And from there, I just knew I had something. But as far as the look of the character, the choreography of the fights and stuff, all of that's Chris Somni. All of that is Chris. Just taking the bare bones and turning it into something. I think the reason I went with the name Ikari, and no one has picked up on this. I am sadly disappointed. No one's picked up on this. The reason I named him Ikari is not just because it meant fury in Japanese, but also because it has two eyes. You know, what was sort of baffling, and Chris may have told you the story, but what was baffling about, or not baffling, but what was sort of the hard part of that story, the big Ikari issue, was I had the line of dialogue, try the red one, which is the tip-off that he's not blind. I had that line like a month before I had the scene. I didn't know what the line meant. I didn't know where it went. I didn't know what the red one was. I didn't know where we were. I just knew that that was the line. I knew that unequivocally that was the line that, because there's no better way of having an ostensibly blind character reveal that he can see than having him call out something and tell you what color it is. I don't know. It's just something that we fell into.
Which, that was kind of the only way you really alluded to the fact that Ikari could see.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I love about it. Now, obviously, when you were given Daredevil, Bullseye had to have come into play, that's one of the things that, again, the Rogues Gallery, he was the main character. Was it like, I'm going to stay as far away from Bullseye for as long as I can? Or did you always have the intentions to bring him back the way you did?
No, the original intention was, let's stay away from all Daredevil villains as far as we can, because again, I don't need to see another Daredevil Kingpin fight anytime soon. And God help me, but I'm sick of ninjas. So it was really sort of a rule going in, let's just do new things. But once we got into it and we realized we needed a mastermind to be setting some pieces in place, then Bullseye came to mind. And I remember the last time we saw him, he was, ostensibly dead and going to be resurrected. I like this idea of Daredevil being the man in the, or not Daredevil, of Bullseye being the man in the Iron Lung, of Bullseye, who is this incredibly kinetic, energetic, physical character being trapped within the confines of his own body and having to create a new skill set for himself as a, you know, as a mastermind who targets Daredevil, you know, through other people.
Which, such a fantastic idea.
Thank you.
The iron lung factor was just, that reveal was like, oh my gosh, wow. And the way you've just kind of, I love the fact that it's like, if somebody brings back Bullseye, they're going to have to try really, really hard now. You know?
Yeah.
There's not much coming back from just being a brain.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck with that. He can't even see anymore. Exactly. He's just a brain in a jar. So good luck with that next Daredevil writer, whoever you will someday be. Yep.
Which, that is a great transition, Mark.
Yeah.
There is a huge rumor going around right now that issue 36 will be the last issue of Daredevil. Can you shed some light on that?
I've in fact heard that rumor as well, and I've seen the covers and stuff. I will back up what Marvel says, that issue 36 is the end of our run. So on that book. So, but beyond that, I can't say anything. At this exact moment in time, I can't say anything other than to verify and also add that anybody who is familiar with my sort of online personality or my, you know, my comics persona is, if I feel like I'm being screwed or disrespected by a company, you probably hear about it pretty loudly. So, and I don't seem to be very loud about this. So I think that the fact that I'm taking it in with a cryptic smile should I don't know, I can't say anything more than that. Let's just say this is all for the good.
Okay. Well, I am a huge fan of Reddit, and I threw it out there that I was going to be talking to you and ask some people to submit some questions. So can we do some rapid-fire questions real quick?
Yeah, sure. I saw that. So I saw that you put out the call for that. So, yeah,
cool.
Some rapid-fire questions. You bet.
I don't know if you saw any of these then. I'm going to start with this one. What is the maximum amount of waffles you could eat in one sitting by opinion unpopular?
Yeah. Three, if they're like the really big plate filling ones, if they're like Eggos, I could probably do five. But if you're a Pancake House or Waffle House, yeah, three tops.
That's actually, wow. You're doing better than me, Mark.
Well, I'm really hungry right now. That is not helping. That's going to influence my answer. I'm really hungry.
Same here. I skipped breakfast. It's too early. Okay, so are there any plans to pick up an artist and stick with him or her for Daredevil, or will you be continuing to see a shuffle, asks Wolfman 007.
I 36 is the end of our run. That's all I can say at this moment.
Hobo Hunter 500 just asks, why?
Some decisions are made above my head. Let's put it that way.
He's just asking why. Not asking exactly what about. He just asks why. So.
Oh, I see. Okay. Then I have no answer for him.
Holdigger 17 asks, Lucky Charms or Captain Crunch?
Oh, Captain Crunch. Were you kidding me?
It doesn't hurt the roof of your mouth?
Yeah, exactly. But I don't have to constantly do the math in my head that I do when I'm eating Lucky Charms to make sure that the ratio of marshmallow pieces to oat pieces is adequate. You know, with Captain Crunch, it's just all in.
But do you go Crunchberry or Classic Crunch?
No, that's an abomination. That's an abomination. Everybody knows that. It's just a Captain Crunch.
Really?
Peanut. No, you kids today and your peanut butter crunch and your Crunchberries. No. It's see, the problem, we're back to the issue of, okay, then I have to sort of look at every spoonful and make sure that I've got a little bit of something in every spoonful or else I'll feel cheated. No. You just go straight Captain Crunch. That way there's just no question.
Okay, now Iron Flag asks, which I think is a great question and something I wanted to talk to you about. He asks, if Mark were offered the job of running DC Comics with the same amount of leeway and creativity control that Joe Quesada received when he took over Marvel, Would he accept the position? Why or why not?
Yes. Yes. Of course I would. That's, you know, end of question, end of statement, end of answer. Yes. But that is never going to happen. So keep dreaming.
Can we talk about you and DC for a second?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. It's an interesting situation. It's not home anymore, but that's, you know, that's okay. They've, you know,
knowing you, personally, you and I personally have hung out a few times. I don't think I've met a bigger DC fan.
No, there's no.
And you were the guy over there for a really long time. What happened?
It's just a general parting of philosophies, I guess. That's a way of putting it. That more and more the kind of comics that they were interested in producing were not the kind of comics that I felt terribly interested in writing. And that's their prerogative, you know, it's not my company. I don't own it. So it's their prerogative, but I find it a shame. I look at the line of books they publish now, and I'm not being critical. I'm just looking at them and thinking, this is not something that I would choose to read. That's not a flight. I'm not the audience. You know, they decided they were going for a different audience than I was comfortable going for, or that I felt like I could write for. And that's what, you know, that's kind of the way they went. So more power to them. I don't think they're long for this world, but we will see.
I mean, was it hard for you to come to terms with, like, the fact that, like, here's the.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, it's like, it's a lifetime of devotion. And it's, you know, it, and then, yeah, it's really, it was very difficult for me to come to terms with that, but I still have my old DC comics. I still have my love for the old DC characters. And, you know, you just kind of have to, at some point, realize there's other things in the world to love besides DC comics. You just have to realize that, you know, things change and it's nothing lasts forever. And, we'll see. I mean, every once in a while you see flashes of the old DC out there. I mean, DC's doing their Adventures of Superman digital comic, which is, you know, back when he had a costume that made sense to me and is the Superman that I'm more familiar with. Doing the Batman 66 stuff online, which is great, that Adam West Batman
stuff.
So
good. So good.
So there's flashes of stuff. I mean, it doesn't mean that, you know, the stuff that I'm interested in, but it's been made abundantly clear to me that I will never work at DC Comics again.
Wow.
And that's, you know, that's their choice. So we'll see what happens if there's ever a regime change. Maybe it'll change. I'm not sitting by the phone. I'm not holding my breath. I've come to terms with the idea that, no, I'm doing pretty well doing my own stuff out here. It's not like I'm hurting for work. It's not like I'm longing to come home. It's nothing like that. It's more a philosophical sense of, all right, well, you know, this is actually good because it's, now I feel like the kid who maybe stayed a little too long at his parents' house and got kicked out, and now he has to make it on his own. So, yeah.
You've pretty much got your hand in everybody but DC at this point.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think there's a single major publisher out there I have, or even minor publisher I haven't worked with at some point. Oh, I forgot. We talked about the things I'm doing. I'm doing the Fox at Archie Comics, and, you know, with Dean Haspiel, a superhero book. So that's another one to add to the list. So,
which looks fantastic. I can't wait to read it.
Thanks. It looks like a really cool, funky indie comic, which is not at all what you associate with Archie, but I think that's great.
Okay, one more from Reddit, which is another great question. Sandals O Sandals asks, will we ever see an oversized hardcover or physical omnibus of his digital comics? So any print? Are you planning to do any print versions of the Throwbit stuff?
Yeah, I mean, planning is a strong word. We are angling toward it. We have no concrete plans in place, but that is only because we're still building the digital catalog. But no, there's no reason in the world why we can't turn that stuff into physical artifacts and print artifacts at some point. I'd rather reverse the paradigm, which is up to this point has always been put it in print first. Spend a lot of money printing a lot of copies and hope that you make it back and then go to digital. I'd rather flip that paradigm and go to digital first. It's easier to make your money back on digital if you're, you know, if you're doing it right, because you're putting, you're having to invest less money going in. And then once you break even on that stuff, then go to print, and that just becomes, you know, extra revenue. In other words, you don't have to mortgage your house to do a print run of trade paperbacks and hope they sell.
Or sell your comic book collection.
Or sell your comic book collection, exactly. Oh, comic book collection. Huh? You're out there somewhere. You're out there in many pieces out there.
How much do you have of it left? And does it, is it a sad moment whenever, you know, do you sell that next big book?
I made my piece of it. Actually, I mean, it's on consignment with Blast Off Comics in Los Angeles. So, and a good friend of mine, Jed Myers. And so a couple of years ago, he came to the house, and he and his wing monkeys loaded up the truck with all my comics, and it was all one fell swoop. So I made me, I had my weekend of mourning, and then I'm okay with it since then. It's not like I don't remember these things. It's not like I got rid of all the trade paperbacks and hardcover collections and stuff. The good stuff is still out there.
Because I don't know if people really know, you had your collection, I mean...
Oh, it was legendary. It was how many comics? I mean, 150 long boxes, at least. So, you know, 40,000, maybe something like that. I mean, 50,000 comics. Every DC comic from about 1956 to the last couple of years. You know, and a lot of Golden Age comics since then, and a lot of Marvels, and, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of key Marvel books, and a lot of other Golden Age stuff. So a pretty eclectic collection, although, yeah, 85% of it, 90% of it was DC Comics. But they live on in my memories. It's all good.
At the end of the day, you go home with your memories, you know?
At the end of the day, there is also... It is not as cool to be the guy with the most comics in the neighborhood when you're 50 as it was when you were 13. And you have to, it's not as cool when you have to start carrying them down giant stairs and putting them in moving trucks. And, you know, those comics have been moved cross country, you know, a half a dozen times probably. And every time you do it, it's sort of like, man, I should go digital.
I had a record and CD collection of probably, I think, 20 to 30,000 records. And I would say another 10 to 20,000 CDs.
And wow.
When you move six times in 5 years, it becomes a real pain in the butt to move around.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm right there. So I got to the point, and when I was going for a career switch, I was like, look, I need money for equipment. And, I have this garage full of stuff that's just sitting there because I started going digital. I sold my comic book collection. I sold my record collection, started a new career. And you know, that's what, I feel like that's what you did with Thrillbit as well.
Yeah. You use the past to pay for the future, to invest in the future.
Do you feel like your investment's paying off?
I think so. I really do think so. I think the cash flow that I had hoped to generate with Thrillbent is not as quick as I thought, as I'd hoped it would be, but that's because we're still sort of blundering around and learning. But it's there, and the growth is there. So in other words, I see a point in the near future where it becomes self-sustaining, where I don't have to occasionally sell a Golden Age Green Lantern comic to pay a colorist, but. I have no doubt we'll get there. We'll get there a little slower than I'd hoped, but the proof of concept is still there, which is you do good work, you promote it, you build a bond with your leadership and your fan base, and they will support you. I mean, nobody's going to get rich, but everybody gets paid.
And that's the you've built a model where essentially you're giving everything for free. Somebody can go to Thrillbent, they can download... You know, one of my favorite books right now is Eighth Seal.
Eighth Seal, yeah.
Which, if nobody's reading that, I'm man, it's one of my favorite books that you guys are putting out right now because it's so unique and so different, and you know, but they can get everything for free. The model, if you were to take this to a banker, would go, "What are you doing?
I know.
How are you able to make this work?"
Well, and the model is what you do is you. You know, you give it for free because, frankly, it's going to be pirated and torrented and shared whether you want it to or not. So you can't close that door. You can't fight piracy. It's like trying to push the tide back with a broom. So instead you embrace it and you realize, okay, well, people are going to take it for free anyway. So what you do is you build a relationship with your readers and you explain to them, look, this is, you know, we want to keep doing this. If you can back us financially, even if it's just for 99 cents a shot, or you know, if you want to download it here off Comixology, or if you want to download it off our storefront for, you know, a buck or two or whatever you feel like paying, that helps us keep doing this stuff. That helps keep giving you comics for free. And it's, like I said, the numbers aren't gargantuan, but they're exactly where I want them to be, which is that for everybody who is reading it for free, there is also somebody who is willing to pay for it because they like what we do. And that's okay by me. Like I said, nobody gets rich, but as long as we don't lose a ton of money, that's all I really care about.
So what's the future for Thrillbent?
More of this and more experimenting. I mean, we've got something new up on the site every day now. We had for a while. And we want to do a little bit more experimenting now with the distribution model. Like you said, well, 8 Seal is a good example. 8 Seal is up for free next week, as every month. It's a monthly series, and we put it up for free next week. But this week we're trying a little something new, and we're putting it on the storefront today, for, like a week early. So if you want to read it for free, you're welcome to. It's on the same schedule as it's always been. You're welcome to read it for free. But if you want to jump ahead a week, if you want to, you know, if you're that hungry for it that you want to see what it's like now, you know, if you want to read it today, then you can, you know, for 99 cents, go to the storefront, download the DRM free PDF, and we'll see how that does. I think that's an interesting way of approaching the question of how do you monetize, which is that, you know, you're asking people to pay not for the content, but you're asking people if they're interested in paying for early access, and we'll see. That's one way of approaching it. There's a bunch of different other pay models that we can use, and we're just kind of cycle through and see what works.
Again, it's no man's land. It's whoever, yeah, whoever can make it the first one to home base, you know.
Yeah,
seems like they're going to win the game. So right before we wrap this up, Mark, the reason I have you on today is you're going to be at the Long Beach Comic Con. November 23rd, yep. 24th, the Long Beach Convention Center, Long Beach, California. This is, how many Long Beach cons have you been to now?
Four or five. I think I've only missed one, I think.
So this is their fifth year. So four, yeah.
Yeah, four, yeah.
It's a great convention, right?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's not the most gigantic convention in the world, but the number of guests they have is really impressive, and the venue is really nice. I mean, I like the fact that it's a convention where at the end of the day, or if you feel like taking a break during the day, you know, there's a million restaurants and coffee shops within walking distance, and there's things to see. So you're not just, you know, stuck out in the middle of nowhere. And then when just like the New York Comic Con, where, you know, you go to the convention center and then, God, you better be willing to walk afterwards if you want something to eat.
Or if the fact that you leave, you're hedging your bets on whether or not you can get back in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Long Beach, very relaxed atmosphere, good show.
Great. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, Mark. I'm having the podcast lounge there, so I would love to have you come by, and you know, we'll do another interview, talk a little bit more Daredevil. Hopefully you can tell me by then what's going on with the book.
All right, sir.
Plugs. Yeah. What do you got anything that you want to talk, you know, anything you want to let listeners know?
Well, we talked about Thrillbent, but let's make it clear that it's thrillbent.com on your web browser, on your phone. And then it's Daredevil, Hulk, Fox, Green Hornet. Oh, gosh, it's a bunch of stuff.
That's the thing, Mark, is we could sit down and we could talk for 3-4 hours about just everything that you've done. At some point, I do want to sit down with you and just the fireside chat version of Mark and your entire history, because there's so much. You have seen more than most comic book creators in a month, than most comic book creators will in years.
I have been doing this for a while. I've been 25 years of history in it. So yeah.
The vault of stories that you must have. You've got to know where a few of the dead bodies are, at least.
Oh, I do. And I may have even buried some of them myself, yes.
Well, thank you again, Mark, for taking the time. I really appreciate it. This is the interview that I've wanted to do for a really long time. So,
Well, good. I'm glad I had a good time. It was a very good interview. Thanks so much, sir, and I will talk to you soon.
I'm so glad that I could share my fanboy moments with all of you. Speaking of fanboy moments, we actually have another podcast here on the Geek Play Podcast Network called Crisis on Infinite Podcasts. And what this is, it's a bi-weekly podcast where me and RC from Fanboy Nation get together with other podcasters, bloggers, and other people within the geek community, and we just talk about the week's events and other things that just happen to come up. And it's on this feed, so if you're subscribed to this, then you'll get it. Eventually, it'll have its own thing, I guess. I'm not sure. But anyways, this week's guest was Connor from iFanboy, and we had a great time talking about comic books and cartoons and just all sorts of stuff. We've got some really exciting guests coming up for it, too, so please make sure you look out for that. It's Crisis on Infinite Podcasts. It's in this feed that you're subscribed to because you're listening to this right now, right? You're subscribed to this. If you are subscribed to this feed, then do me a huge favor. Go over, write a review, drop some stars on whatever it is that you're listening to this, your iTunes library, whatever it is. Go over, give us some feedback. I want to hear your feedback. Do you like this podcast? Please tell me. You can either write me personally at kevin@eatgeekplay.com, or you can post it in Stitcher, iTunes, wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast right now. Go over, drop us a review, because these things actually affect our ratings on the iTunes library and the Stitcher library and how people find out about us. And that's really important. See, I really love doing this podcast. It's kind of become my full-time job, just doing this and the website. But being that my full-time job does not make money, it hurts. You can help a little bit. If you're on eatgeekplay.com, the website, you'll see some banner ads, some advertising. Click on those. Just all I ask is that you click on those. You don't have to buy anything. You just gotta click on the ads. That helps put money into the account so we can pay for stuff like server costs. And, you know, I gotta eat every now and then. So just do me a favor. Go over to eatgeekplay.com, click on some of those banners, or go over to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to this, drop a review. Make sure you follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/eatgeekplay. Let's talk geek next week. This is how it all begins. Yeah, it's a new day, and I think things are gonna work out your way. When the wind picks up and it moves your feet, everything else has just gotta get out your way.